Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. As we make our way through Memorial Day weekend in these challenging times, we'll meet the CEO of Wheeler to learn more about how this agency is providing an integrated approach to primary and behavioral health, education, and recovery for more than 30,000 individuals across Connecticut every year. And we'll help celebrate the recent opening of Wheeler's new expanded Waterbury Family Health and Wellness Center. Then we'll talk to a former North Branford and Connecticut Teacher of the Year about how she found a successful second career through Teach Connecticut. And we'll hear some advice on how to help keep students in your home engaged during the COVID-19 pandemic that cut this school year tragically short and may cause substantial changes in the way our kids re-enter their school environments this fall. And we'll close with the former CDC and Boston health official and current CEO of the Trust for America's Health talking about specific Connecticut stats on alcohol, drug, and suicide deaths and how the coronavirus could contribute to an increase in all these destructive outcomes. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. After we talked about it on For the People a few weeks ago, Boys and Girls Village right here in Milford checked in reminding us that the agency's new Life Skills and Vocational Center are still projected to be open this fall. The goal of the center is to create real-world experiences in the areas of automotive repair, computer-aided design, and culinary arts. These marketable skills can be carried into the job market, build self-confidence, and provide a link to higher learning possibilities. Boys and Girls Village knows that achieving economic self-sufficiency in early adulthood is one of the biggest predictors of future success, and the center is going to strengthen the foundation of at-risk youth as they take their next steps and enter early adulthood. If you'd like to learn more or maybe support the effort, just visit bgvillage.org. Well, I am with a guest this morning who is part of my hometown gang. I am very pleased to make the acquaintance of Dr. Sabrina Troche. She is president and CEO of Wheeler, the Wheeler Family Health and Wellness Centers across the region, provide integrated primary care, dental, behavioral health, and wellness all under one roof. They have offices in Hartford, in Bristol, in New Britain, and also in Waterbury. And that's what brings us initially to talk with Sabrina. That and the fact that we've discovered this crossover point of John Spoonhour, who has been a very good friend to the award-winning For the People and a pipeline to fantastic guests going back now over a quarter century. Dr. Troche is just our latest. So Dr. Troche, welcome to the program and thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So beyond the introduction, give us the background on Wheeler.
Sure. So Wheeler is an organization that was established in 1968. We are recognized for 50 years plus experience with behavioral health, special education, child welfare, early childhood and prevention and wellness services. In 2015, we made the determination based on input from our patients to expand into primary care and establish ourselves as a community health center. What we were finding with our adult patients in behavioral health services was overwhelmingly they did not have access to primary care services. And when it came to accessing services, they didn't have a regular primary care provider and would really see the emergency room as the place where they would access primary care services as needed. We knew, and we know today, that individuals with behavioral health generally have a lifespan that's 20 to 25 years less than an individual in the general population. And so, and in many instances, individuals are really dying because of complications with co-physical, co-medical issues. And so we wanted to do things differently. So we established our health and wellness centers, And we're very proud to open up our new center in Waterbury.
It sounds like there's a huge amount of synergy across all the services that you provide. Literally, anybody coming through the Wheeler portal with one particular issue may be able to avail themselves to services virtually across the entire spectrum of what you do.
That's absolutely our model and our approach. So we take an integrated care approach where, regardless for what issue the patient is presenting, if the patient's presenting for a primary care issue, we ask and we screen for behavioral health and other social issues that may impact their care. And we take that approach for any service that patients come into our service system.
That's excellent. Well, tell me a little bit about your partnerships and how you integrate through the feeder agencies, whether they be local, regional, or state, that help connect you with the people that you're helping the most.
Well, in Waterbury, Wheeler has been in the Waterbury community since 1986, providing a number of community-based and in-home behavioral health services throughout the community. In September 2019, in partnership with St. Mary's Hospital, we transitioned the St. Mary's Outpatient Behavioral Health Center, which is located at 100 Visitation Plaza in Waterbury, to Wheeler. And the intent of the transfer to Wheeler was really so that Wheeler could bring our full integrated approach to that location. So beginning in September, we expanded to offer, in addition to behavioral health and psychiatric services, we expanded to primary care services. At the time, that location served only adults. What we found pretty quickly was the need for pediatric services, for child psychiatry, and child behavioral health services. Recognizing that that location was not large enough to be able to house the full array of services that we felt the community needed, we quickly started a search and identified the new location, which is 855 Lakewood Road in Waterbury. That location offered us the opportunity to expand and offer services for children, adults, and families, including primary care, psychiatric services, and behavioral health supports.
So you're now located somewhere adjacent to the Target Plaza in Waterbury on Lakewood Road?
We're a standalone building. We're in the same plaza as Planet Fitness.
Oh, I see. Okay, great. I know exactly where that is. Good. So tell me about what the new space in Waterbury has been able to provide you in terms of opportunities to expand or maybe even introduce some new initiatives through Wheeler.
Sure. So the new space is completely renovated, spacious, bright, state-of-the-art facility that has really provided us the opportunity to expand our primary care physical exam space to offer both adult and child primary care services. We've expanded now and have child behavioral health providers, clinicians on site, in addition to offering child psychiatric services on site. So the expansion really has allowed us to bring in the specialties we needed specifically for the pediatric components. In addition to the pediatric expansions, we've also expanded our adult services. So we found pretty quickly that the need for primary care, for psychiatry, and for behavioral health supports in Waterbury was great. Mm-hmm. In addition to those services, we also offer what we call specialty substance abuse treatment services. So in response to the opioid crisis we're seeing across Connecticut, across the Northeast, and across the country, we have expanded our access so that we can offer the community immediate access to evidence-based medication-assisted treatment programs for either opioid addiction or alcohol treatment.
We also saw some news coming out of Wheeler about a new initiative involving Narcan. What was that about?
Sure. We partnered with the American Savings Foundation in looking to see if we could purchase Narcan to be able to make available to the community. And we're very happy to say that the foundation was able to provide us resources. Wheeler is matching a component of the resources so that we can bring Narcan to patients as needed.
Very good. Well, in the last few minutes that we have with you, Dr. Troche, tell us a little bit more about how Wheeler is playing an important role moving forward in this COVID-19 world that we find ourselves in. Have you discovered that there were some particular challenges as the issues related to this virus emergency ramped up? And what type of ways have you found that Wheeler has had to pivot in order to be a more viable resource for folks that are dealing with the COVID-19 emergency?
As you can imagine, individuals with behavioral health issues who may be experiencing post-traumatic stress disorders and or other anxiety and other clinical issues, COVID and the stressors that are a part of COVID have really increased the need for individuals to continue to have access to their behavioral health providers. As such, we quickly shifted our treatment model to include telehealth. So patients today have the option to come in to our offices in person if needed, but they know they have the option to also connect with us via telehealth and or telephonically. And what we're finding within the last 2 to 3 weeks now, overwhelmingly patients are choosing to stay engaged in treatment and stay engaged in treatment via the telehealth modalities. And that's really because they want to stay safe. They don't want to expose themselves to any potential risks, but at the same time recognize that they need the ongoing treatment and supports that we're able to offer them.
That's great. Anything else related to a surge in need to your organization as a result of the emergency? Are you finding a lot of people that may have been staying in control in their own heads or their own hearts prior to February and March of this year, that this has been the trigger that has caused them to maybe realize that they have a mental health issue and they need to reach out to an organization like Wheeler to get the help and support they need to be able to sustain themselves or recover?
So I would say in early April, what we did see was actually a reduction in patients presenting for care. And as COVID has continued, what we're starting to see within the last month or so is a continued increase in new individuals who may not have been established with Wheeler or with other providers presenting for care. What we envision will continue to happen is that those new individuals will continue to increase as COVID continues and as the impact of the stressors and the anxiety and all of the issues that children, adults are dealing with begin to really become unmanageable. So we're continuing to position ourselves so that we're offering patients immediate access to services, but we recognize that the demand for these services within the next few weeks, months, and on will continue to be increasingly increasing throughout that period of time.
Well, both personally and professionally, I got to imagine it feels good to see that people are recognizing that they're having a mental health concern and are seeking out for the very first time, making that important leap of faith and crossing the threshold into an organization like Wheeler to maybe get the help that they may have needed for years or even decades, but that through this global health crisis, they are finding a way out of their own mental health crisis with the help of Wheeler.
And that's exactly what we're encouraging and what we're putting out there. Up until March 13th, telehealth services were not widely available in Connecticut. Connecticut Medicaid program did not reimburse for those services. And so as soon as we received the green light in being able to establish those services, we moved fairly quickly because we were hearing from patients the level of anxiety and concern they had in presenting into one of our physical settings. And it was the struggle between fear of coming in, but also fear and concern of not being engaged and continuing to work with the clinician, the provider, the practitioner that has been supporting them. So we were very fortunate that we've been able to move very quickly. Patients are very appreciative of having the flexibilities to connect with us in the modality that fits the best with where they are and what services and supports that they need.
To give you the last word as we wrap up here, Dr. Troche, let's talk directly to those who may be experiencing signs of post-traumatic stress disorder or high-level clinical anxiety over the current COVID situation. Certainly, the conversation, especially over the past few minutes, has potentially given anyone reason to come forward and ask for help themselves. But, what do you have to say to people who may be experiencing these symptoms and have not yet connected that they may need to reach out for help?
What I would say is you're not alone, that help is available. And just by calling Wheeler or organizations like Wheeler, we can get you connected to the right individual to work with you.
Excellent. Folks can go to wheelerclinic.org to learn more about this organization, which is now thriving in Hartford, Waterbury, Bristol, and New Britain. Integrated primary care, dental, behavioral health, and wellness all under one roof, no matter which office you go to. We've been chatting with their president and CEO of Wheeler, Dr. Sabrina Troche. Sabrina, thank you so much for your time this morning and a great conversation about this, and best of luck with the new location in Waterbury, which we now see is right at the kind of the crux of Lakewood and Wolcott Road. So really kind of at the crossroads of the world, easy to find for folks, and even easier now because of your expansion into telehealth and your successful jump to that. So thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you. And please do stay safe.
Well, we haven't had a lot of opportunity here on the award-winning For the People to talk about educating students during the COVID-19 emergency, but that streak ends today. I am so pleased to welcome a former 2017 Connecticut Teacher of the Year and Teach Connecticut teacher, ambassador, and advisor, also a ninth grade science educator at North Brantford High School. Go North Brantford. I'm really psyched to meet Lauren Danner. She's on the line with us today, and we're going to be talking a lot about both opportunities for folks out there to perhaps make a career change or get started in a career as an educator, and how the Teach Connecticut program might be able to provide an opportunity to do that. But we wanted to start off the conversation talking kind of teacher to parent and maybe teacher to student, because as Lauren explained before we opened up the microphone this morning, she is not only an educator but a parent and has two young children who are in the process of going through their first experience of tele-education or virtual teaching. So Lauren, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So first of all, give me a little bit more about your background. You were 2017 Connecticut Teacher of the Year, but you've also excelled in being recognized for your work in science. You're recognized locally as a Teacher of the Year. What is, tell us more about your position at North Brantford High School.
Yes, sure. So I'm actually not only a science teacher there, I'm also the department leader. And what's interesting about my pathway is I grew up in the North Brantford community. I actually went to school at the high school that I'm now teaching at. So it's kind of come full circle to me. You know, a lot of the students that I was once students with at North Brantford High School, we now all have children in the community, so I'm able to teach my own friends and their children as well. So that's been, you know, an exciting thing. And then, you know, I think now things have definitely changed in terms of distance learning, and I definitely see it from both perspectives as a teacher and as a parent with students in my own district and some of the challenges that we're facing.
You also know all the closets and nooks and crannies to go and find the kids back when, I guess, school was in session, if they were trying to avoid coming to science class.
Usually, I mean, I have to say that's not the case. Who doesn't love science? Come on.
Well, if you make it good, it's good. I mean, there's a lot of ways. I was blessed to have a really, really excellent physics educator, and probably the only reason I ever thought that if I am researching or doing things in the scientific world, aside from health, I'm leaning more towards physics, because I was so inspired by Fred Centrella, who at the time lived in Prospect and taught me at Holy Cross High School in Waterbury. So I still remember his name. He made that much of an impression. And physics will always be my favorite science of all of the sciences that I do not like.
Well, that's amazing. And that just speaks to how much of an impact educators have in the lives of their students.
Yep. So so you're a parent and a teacher, so you're in a fantastic position to kick off the program with a little bit of advice. Let's start with parents. Knowing what you know as an educator, I imagine it was still quite a leap to begin facilitating that in your own home for your own kids as kind of like an overseer of their educational experience.
Right, right. And so, you know, the first piece of advice I would say for all parents out there is to just be kind to yourselves and to have a lot of patience. This is a learning curve for all of us. You know, even as a teacher and as a parent, I'm seeing firsthand how difficult and, you know, these times are with distance learning and the challenges that are arising. So I would definitely say to, you know, do the best you can with, you know, the constraints and what you're working with and the resources, and just to always keep the lines of communication open with your child's teachers. You know, for me, I'm a little bit more lucky, I think, in the sense that my kids are actually a little bit older. So I have a middle school and a high school student at home. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the challenges are a bit different for those age groups as they would be for, let's say, you know, a K-5 student. So definitely just keeping those lines of communication open with teachers and letting them know what's happening in your homes. You know, our kids are dealing with a lot of stress, a lot of anxiety with what's been happening. So it's important for teachers and parents and students to all be on the same page.
you bring up an important point and the critical role that parents now really kind of need to fill more than ever, because they're so much more of a facilitator. They're not just, you know, putting their kids on the bus or dropping them off in the morning and then doing the necessary required interaction of between a parent, a student, and educators in the institutional setting. Now moving that classroom to their own kitchen table, their den, or their kid's bedroom is a whole different ball game. Are there a couple of frequent challenges that you've heard about most, or maybe even experienced yourself as a parent?
Sure, definitely. You know, the biggest challenge that I've seen is honestly the work-life balance. And, you know, regardless of what you're doing in terms of your career, we're seeing now more than ever people are working from home. And so they're trying to balance being able to do their work from home with trying to also help their students engage in learning, especially at those younger levels. For me, you know, my kids have pretty much a certain schedule where they follow, and I just check in with them to make sure that everything is okay and that they're staying on task and doing what they're supposed to be doing. But definitely, you know, that balance of trying to do what you're supposed to be doing in terms of your work-related issues and then also helping your kids at home. And then there's also, of course, the barrier with equity and in terms of, you know, access to technology and internet issues, things like that, that are, you know, constantly challenges for all teachers and students and families in Connecticut. So, you know, just trying to figure out how students can access that content and how parents can help them to access that content.
As a science teacher, you're also kind of in a unique position to appreciate the fact that so many educators, and I imagine yourself as well, have been able to utilize the situation that we all find ourselves in as a constant series of teaching moments, riffing off of the COVID-19 situation and all the scientific and medical and health implications, but also in the rediscovering of the science that exists in one's own kitchen, in one's own backyard, in one's own neighborhood park or hiking trail. I have to give you and all of your colleagues credit for utilizing as much of the shared experience and the personal familiarity with the environments that they're in for the students to actually be able to like learn a lot about themselves and the close proximity of educational opportunities that could be as close as their own kitchen sink.
I love how you put that. That is perfect. I mean, 100% I agree. Life is a classroom. There are educational opportunities that abound. They're constantly surrounding us. And, you know, that's one of the nice connections, especially, as you mentioned, with science. You know, we have chemistry experiments in the kitchen. We have environmental science when we go outside. So those are just a few examples.
So in terms of the students, you talked a little bit to the parents. You know, let's maybe, if you could, maybe break it down. Are there significantly different things that the younger ones need to be doing or paying attention to versus the older ones? Because the younger ones are still sort of in that maybe proportional amount of learning for the sake of learning versus when you get into the middle and especially the high school age, where you're learning as well in order to advance yourself to the next level of education.
Yeah, sure. Well, all students, you know, regardless of their age, they typically thrive with structures, you know, and for our youngest learners, that structure isn't there for them to go to school. And, you know, their behaviors are different with their own parents than they would be with teachers. So I think just trying to keep their attention at home is a struggle for our youngest learners, keeping them engaged, you know, and then a way for our parents to effectively teach that content when they've never had to, you know, deal with any of these situations before. And so, you know, parents, like I said earlier, they need to just kind of have patience and think of themselves, as you mentioned, like facilitators and try to do the best they can. But, you know, what's great about, and luckily with Connecticut, we have many districts who have already gone digital prior to the pandemic, where kids have already had, for example, something called Google Classroom set up, Schoology set up, where they've actually been used to online platforms. And so, you know, as long as parents are trying to make sure their students are engaging in those online platforms, platforms. That's all we could ask of them.
Well, and I'm hoping you also have heard along the line from parents that they're learning something new every day too. They're returning to an environment where they're being educated.
100%. I love the emails. You know, one of the things that, of course, we're seeing an increase in is our virtual communication via emails, chats, messages. And I'm hearing a lot about my own parents, students that I'm teaching currently, and they're reaching out to me saying, oh, my gosh, I learned so much about the carbon cycle today. I just heard a video that one of my students was playing for one of my classes. So yeah. I think it's a learning experience for everyone.
And I guess trying as much as you can to make it fun, you know, as a former driving instructor and parent, I know that those two things really should be separate. You know, when you're the parent and the facilitator, if not the teacher, I guess it's a little bit different flavored challenge, let's just say. Folks, we are with the former Connecticut Teacher of the Year, a recognized educator in North Brantford. She was a student at North Brantford High School. Now she is their Science Department Chair. Lauren Danner is on the line. We're going to come back after a very brief break and talk about her role as a Teach Connecticut Teacher Ambassador and Advisor, and find out how you might be able to get involved and enjoy the joys of educating. We'll be right back. Do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting an awareness or fundraising event, or you'd like to find one that's supporting a nonprofit in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find out how to promote it or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. When it comes to understanding domestic violence, the Connecticut Coalition Against Domestic Violence and its CCADV Training Institute has you covered, offering virtual training to meet your needs. On Wednesday, June 10th, CCADV is presenting two important web training opportunities, bringing Coaching Boys Into Men to your school or organization at 10 a.m. and bringing Coaching Girls to Leaders to your school or organization at 1. These free trainings are open to any coach, athletic director, team mentor, social worker, school counselor, or advocate interested in providing one or both initiatives to middle or high school age students. All CCADV asks is for a commitment to implementing the program with your team after you participate in the training. To learn more or to sign up and be notified on other training and webinar opportunities, just visit ctcadv.org. Well, we're back and having a great conversation with Lauren Danner. She's a Teach Connecticut Teacher Ambassador and Advisor. She's a ninth grade science teacher at North Brantford High School, a former North Brantford student, and also recognized as a Teacher of the Year in her community. And as a teen.com most inspirational teacher, and I think you're hearing why. She's also a science department chair at North Brantford High School. But let's switch gears and talk about Teach Connecticut, a nonprofit partnership between teach.org, the Connecticut State Department of Education, and Connecticut school districts and educator preparation programs. It was created to assist anyone considering teaching in Connecticut. So we heard a little bit about your background already, Lauren. So let's talk a bit about the need for great teachers and how sometimes the greatest teachers actually come to the job a little bit later in life after they've gained a lot of personal life and work experience in a completely different area of expertise.
Sure, absolutely. You know, the need for great teachers has always been there. You know, specifically in our state and across the country, we need a more diverse workforce so that all students have an opportunity to learn from teachers who not only look like them, but so that students can see themselves in the teachers that are standing in front of them in their classroom. So that's always been a great need. And you know, one of the things that we at Teach Connecticut, we're always trying to recruit not only great teachers, but teachers from diverse cultures and backgrounds. And then, you know, in terms of now, we are seeing an increase in volume in terms of calls for prospective teachers, people who are losing their jobs due to the pandemic, and they're actually contemplating a career
career change into teaching. And I think, you know, now more than ever, if that's a situation that you find yourself in, if you've got a passion for a specific subject, something that you think you would, you know, really enjoy teaching, and not only that, but you enjoy working with the youth, you enjoy working with children, then I think that teaching is seriously something that you can consider as a second career.
Mm. You're also in a unique situation as a science teacher, that you are the S in STEM, and STEM is like the biggest, hottest and most important, I guess, new development in the world of education, especially for very, very young people on up through the high school ages, because it's creating new foundations. And as we kind of talked about earlier, imbuing a love for science and math and that type of potential future career option at a very early age.
100%, absolutely. You know, what's interesting now is we are seeing, especially during this pandemic, the importance of scientific literacy. And this is something that, you know, STEM teachers are always focusing on, using data, using scientific data as evidence to support claims. These are skills that are critical to, you know, all learners. And we're seeing this now more than ever, just with what's happening in the pandemic and, you know, wanting to be scientifically literate.
Mm. Well, for those who were entrepreneurs or those who were in the gig economy, even those who may have been affiliated in careers for many, many years, who have now seen the landscape quite differently due to the coronavirus emergency, and they're looking at the possibility that maybe now is the time to change careers, teach.org and Teach Connecticut are a viable option for virtually anyone, right?
100%. So we have at our Teach Connecticut website an enormous amount of resources so that we can make the transition as a second career teacher, you know, as easy as possible for you. I know when I first looked into teaching prior to becoming a teacher about 12 years ago, I was a research scientist and I was looking to change careers. I loved my job so much, but our company ended up running out of funding and we shut down. And so I found myself in what I referred to as my career crossroads, where I had to make a decision. Did I want to continue as a research scientist or maybe look into other opportunities? And, you know, teaching was at the forefront of my decision because of the fact that I wanted to see the impacts that I would have on people's lives. You can't really say that about a lot of professions, that you're able to actually see the day-to-day impacts on people, and you can say that with teaching. And so that was one of the lures that drew me in to teaching. And, you know, like I said earlier, we didn't have a lot of these resources available to us at that time, so it was almost fate, I felt like. I ended up reaching out to an educator prep program just to learn a little bit more about the process of how to become a teacher, because I didn't really know a lot about it. And I ended up connecting with their program coordinator, who was a former high school science teacher of mine. Mm. And so he was able to serve as my mentor. And so, you know, fast forward 10 years, now I'm in that role, and we have this resource through Teach Connecticut, where we have a number of things that you can look up in terms of learning more about what teaching is like. You can sign up to get a phone call from a teacher such as myself and other educators throughout the state of Connecticut, and you can get expert advice on what teaching is like, how to become a teacher, so the certification process in Connecticut, and, you know, also things that are important like scholarship opportunities, financial aid, all of that is available through our Teach Connecticut website and those resources.
Well, as you have launched and successfully navigated your way well into a teaching career from a career in science, in research, and you're talking to people about maybe becoming a teacher themselves, what are a couple of the most common myths or, you know, these, well, maybe it's not for me kind of moments? How do you kind of assuage those concerns?
Right. Well, I think one of the most common myths that frustrates me is just this idea of teacher work ethic. You know, you always have, you know, the comments about summers off and snow days, and this myth that teachers don't work as hard as other professionals do. And I can tell you that you know, it's that saying that everyone's heard, teaching is a calling, you know, to a lot of passionate educators. We are constantly honing our craft. Outside of school hours, we're working on curriculum, we're planning lessons, that we're trying to, you know, maintain engagement with all of our students, promoting critical thinking skills. And what's so appealing about teaching as a career is no 2 days are ever the same. You always have new challenges that present themselves every day. That's one of the things actually I miss most about seeing my students on a daily basis, is just I'm smiling thinking about it, all of those things that keep you on your toes, you know, and teachers are really experts at doing these hard things. And I think now is a perfect demonstration of that. I've seen in, you know, social media and on the TV how much appreciation people have now for teachers when they can see what it is that we're doing through, you know, creating and curating all of our distance learning lessons. And it's definitely something that we've appreciated as teachers as well.
Excellent. Well, I really appreciate you teaching us a little bit more about the possibilities and the opportunities available in the field of education. Our guest, Lauren Danner, is the science department chair at North Bramford High School, where she was also a student, former researcher. She is a 2012 Most Inspirational Teacher at teen.com. She has enjoyed the North Bramford District Teacher of the Year Award. And in 2017, she was Connecticut Teacher of the Year. Look what she's done. If she could do that, virtually anybody with her type of passion could do it. We urge you to get with Teach Connecticut through teach.org and learn more yourself about the passions that you can bring to students through this great career opportunity. Thank you, Lauren, for being part of the program this morning.
Thank you so much.
We're very pleased to meet another John on the program this morning. We're talking to John Auerbach. We're checking in with him in Washington, D.C. And John is with the Trust for America's Health, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that promotes optimal health for every person and community and makes the prevention of illness and injury a national priority. If folks want to learn more about that organization, they can go to tfah.org. John, tell us quickly a little bit about yourself and your coming into this leadership role at the Trust.
Sure. Well, before coming to Trust for America's Health, I spent about 30 years in the public health sector. I was the Boston Public Health Commissioner for a decade. I was the Massachusetts Health Commissioner for several years. And then I worked at the Centers for Disease Control. And in each of those jobs, I had an opportunity to both examine the issues related to drug, alcohol, and suicide, and also consider what were effective approaches for addressing those concerns.
Well, we've certainly seen, sadly, a lot of death and despair coming out of the COVID-19 public health emergency. Can we get into the conversation talking a little bit about how the pandemic might affect the trajectory of mental and behavioral health trends, because we are going to be focusing on some Connecticut-specific statistics on things like suicide and drug addiction and some of the policies and programs and ways to address them?
Well, sadly, there's every reason to believe that the COVID-19 pandemic is going to exacerbate the problems related to drugs, alcohol, and suicide. And, you know, the reasons for that are the elevated trauma in people's lives, the stress related to sheltering in place, and for many people, the loss of a loved one, as well as job loss, economic pressures, school closings. All of those things create the kind of conditions that can elevate these risks. And just a few early indications of that are a federal emergency hotline for people with emotional stress saw a 1,000% increase in calls in April of this year when compared with April of last year. And a study that was put out just last week suggested that 75,000 additional deaths are likely from these causes in the coming years associated with the impact of COVID-19.
Well, your organization, in conjunction with the Wellbeing Trust, recently released data that shows almost 152,000 Americans dying from alcohol, drugs, or suicides in 2018. Now, you know, that's a few years ago, but talk a little bit about why 2018 data is still really, really good data and important. It's been quite a while since that kind of information was put together previously, right?
It's true. I mean, even though here we are in 2020, 2018 is actually the most recent data that is available, and it just was released relatively recently. It takes a while for the data to be analyzed and collected. So the end of 2019, all of the death certificates begin to be analyzed. And so the 2019 data won't be out for a few more months. So this gives us a picture of where we were, as you say, in 2018. But in all likelihood, it is these numbers are very relevant to what we'll see for the 2019 data. And sadly, I think we'll see an increase in terms of the deaths in 2020.
Well, let's take a look at Connecticut then. What are a couple of the high points that we can call from the information that you have in front of you about our state?
Well, there's mixed news. What we have seen overall in Connecticut that can be seen as somewhat positive is that after years of year after year increases in the deaths from these three causes, what we found in 2018 was a leveling off, more or less the same number of deaths from the three causes went in aggregate as the previous year. That can be seen as a good thing because sometimes before you can go down, you level off. So we'll keep an eye on whether that is likely to continue. But what's interesting is if you look below the aggregate numbers of alcohol, drug, and suicide deaths, we see some notable changes in 2018. Well, those are a significant decrease in alcohol deaths. Alcohol-related deaths went down 7% in 2018 when compared to 2017. Hmm. And so that's a positive finding and worthy of exploring. Was there something that was done specifically during the past few years that may have had that positive impact on alcohol? We, on the other hand, we saw a 4% increase in suicides when compared to the previous year. Percentage increases is one that we saw across the country, roughly a 2 to 4% increase in suicides across the country and in many states. And so that's an indication that that we need to pay attention to suicide. With drugs, we saw a shift. We saw a decrease in deaths from prescription opioids, a increase in deaths from synthetic opioids, those are drugs like fentanyl, and a dramatic increase, although the numbers are still quite small, in methamphetamine-related deaths and or other drugs that are referred to as psychostimulants. Mm-hmm. So that suggests to us that we've really got to pay attention to the larger picture. In some instances where we see one risk go down and other risks go up, it means that we may have paid attention to a specific problem rather than the underlying issues that are leading people to have substance use addictions or to consider suicide.
Well, while in Connecticut, a lot of strategic initiative is probably being put forth toward focusing on each individual issue, alcohol, drug, and suicide. Across the board, you and your colleagues have identified five issue areas that have to be considered to stem the tide of deaths from any of these, particularly in young adults. Can you review those?
Sure. One thing we would start out by saying is we need to think about the underlying causes, the upstream causes. Those can be related to trauma associated with poverty or racism. They can have to do with insecure home life or violence in the home. And so we really want to think about upstream. How do we work to create safer conditions so that we see fewer people that are scarred by their experiences? So even things like income efforts like unemployment insurance or earned income tax credits are good policies to consider. We also, the second thing is we need to pay attention to children who experience traumatic, who have experienced traumatic events in their lives and build in resilience for those children. And there's some very effective school-based programs that that can be helpful in terms of working with children. With suicide in particular, we need to pay attention to the means of suicide, and that means safe protection of medications in the home and gun availability. The majority of suicides are with firearms, so paying attention to limiting exposure to the means of suicide is important. Alcohol is surprisingly a problem. Most people don't think that that leads to death, but we are certainly, there are steps that can be taken with regard to that as well. And the last point I'd make is that we need to make sure we pay attention to the whole person, and healthcare access is key. We need to ensure people have access to high quality healthcare, and that healthcare doesn't just deal with the physical, it deals with the behavioral, mental health, and substance abuse in an easy to access way. That's already a problem, or that was a problem before COVID-19, because we had a portion of the population that was still uninsured, and because we really didn't consistently adopt parity of covering behavioral health. Mm. And sadly, with COVID-19, we think that those levels of uninsured people are going to rise dramatically as unemployment rises.
Okay. Well, in the last couple of minutes that we have with you, John, can you just quickly remind us the most effective way, in your perspective, to talk to or approach a loved one if you're concerned they may have a substance misuse disorder or a mental health issue?
I think it's to show concern and show support and ask how they're feeling. And to do that in a non-judgmental way. There's a lot of stigma that's still attached to substance misuse and to suicidality or consideration of suicide. And so in a non-judgmental way, reach out, show your concern, ask how someone's doing, really listen, and let them know that you're there for them. And if it seems they need services, do your best to try to link them to the services that may help.
Very good. Well, we appreciate you taking some time to talk with us today and help us become a little bit more familiar, but not only with yourself, but the work that you're doing as president and CEO of the Trust for America's Health. This organization is a nonprofit, nonpartisan group that promotes optimal health for every person and community and makes the prevention of illness and injury a national priority. This organization, in conjunction with the Well-Being Trust, recently released new statistics based on 2018 data in regards to alcohol, drugs, and suicide death. You can learn more by visiting their website, which is tfah.org. John, stay well, stay safe, and thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you very much.
You You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program for the people. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.